We are missing the first few minutes. I am sorry, I forgot to press this a second time. Apologies. So, the Möbius function is the inverse, multiplicative inverse of this zeta function. Since the zeta function is in some way natural, even if it might be so obvious that it is natural, but should it be interesting? But so the inverse should be something natural, and indeed it has some interesting properties. So, there are two properties of this function which follow from the definition. Well, I just call it a node if you want. You could call it a lemma. We have that mu of x, comma x is equal to 1, right? Because the inverse on x, comma x is just the inverse, just the value at x, comma x inverted. And the second property is that mu of x, comma y is equal to minus the sum over x is smaller equal than z is strictly smaller than y mu of x, comma z. And this follows, this is essentially the product formula, using again that the product should be, that it's the inverse of the zeta function, that the product should be 1. And we get, and then you take the last term, the term mu xy, and we bring it over to the other side. And these allow us to calculate the values of mu recursively. And furthermore, we observe that the values must be integers, right? Because there is nothing, we can never leave the domain of integers with these operations. So what we get is that the Möbius function must have integer values. Right. Let's start before showing some of the properties. Let's start with some examples of calculating values of this Möbius function. So, let's first look at the case of a total order. And the elements, let's say the elements are the elements 1 up to n, then what is the value of the Möbius function for two elements? Well, it is 1 if x is equal to y. That is just this property. It is minus 1 if x plus 1 is equal to y. So what does this x plus 1 mean? Because I named my objects 1 to n, it means x is the maximal element which is smaller than y. Right? And if I have a total order, such elements clearly exist. Why does this hold? Well, if x plus 1 is y, this sum actually generates that there is just one sum, and namely the sum in mu x, comma x, and mu x, comma x is 1, and the minus x is minus 1. And it's 0 otherwise. It's 0 because you just look at this sum. The first, then you have multiple terms. The first term is 1, the next term is minus 1. Their sum is 0, and then to get 0 in total, the next sum it has to be 0, and the next sum it has to be 0, and so on. So that's the Möbius function on a total order. It just tells me whether something is an immediate predecessor. Okay. Next, let's look at some lattices we know. Let's look at the case of a direct product, and that will give us the Möbius function for some lattices we know. So, and this is lemma 3.26. Let's suppose that P and Q are posets, and then the Möbius function on the direct product, on the direct product P cross Q, I have that mu, the Möbius function for P cross Q, for a pair, for an interval. Now endpoints are pairs, right? So this goes from x1 to y1, x1, y1 to x2, y2. And when are they in relation? They are in relation exactly if x1 is smaller or equal than x2 and y1 is smaller or equal than y2. That was how we defined the ordering on the direct product. And what I claim is this is simply the Möbius function for P on x1, x2 times the Möbius function on Q for y1. y2. And why does this hold? These two properties characterize the Möbius function. We just verify that the function which is defined as this product satisfies this property. And that follows, and then basically this sum over the elements in between. You need the elements in between are pairs, but they need to be in between x and in between y, and then you can split this into the product of two sums, and you start with this, with the product, and then you can say instead of having this product, you have a sum over all pairs which lie between, and that way you verify that this property holds. So, prove the defining property. And I should say I call these two things, this is the defining property. Yeah, holds. So that's the Möbius function on a direct product. Why do I care about this? Well, let's look at two lattices we know. Let's look at the case of the power set and the case of divisors. So, corollary, let's look if A is a finite set. The poset shall be the power set. Then for x and y in the power set, so two subsets of A, I have that mu of x comma y is equal to minus 1 to the order of y minus the order of x if x is contained in y and 0 otherwise. Okay. These are basically the coefficients if you do inclusion-exclusion. If you take the Möbius, if y is your whole set then you get the coefficients from inclusion exclusion. That's why this is both in the same chapter. So the Möbius function is a generalization. In that way, the Möbius function is a generalization of inclusion exclusion. Okay. So the second case is, let's suppose n is a natural number. Well, then I want it probably to be bigger than 1. I take p shall be the divisors of n. The divisors with divisibility as the ordering relation. Then that's okay, that's how I managed. I'm always wondering how I get the chalk on the shoes. Okay. Right. Yeah. So what is mu of x comma y? I claim this is minus 1 to the d if y divided by x is the product of d different primes. Different primes and zero other ones. Okay. And that explains the name, because that is basically the number theoretic Möbius function, well, for the number y divided by x. Okay. Yeah, so why does this hold? We know that, let's first look at the power set. The power set is the direct product of intervals 0, 1, of the post set. The power set on a set of size n is the n-fold direct product of the post set 0, 1 with itself. What's the Möbius function of the post set 0, 1? Well, this follows from this lemma, right? This is the case for n equals 2. There I have value 1 if they're the same, and value minus 1 if 1 is if I go from 0 to 1, well, in value 0 if I have them in the wrong order. And I use the multiplicativity, and then I get that property here. In the case of the number theoretic Möbius function, well, we know the lattice is the direct product of the lattices for the prime powers. Well, what is the lattice for a prime power, for divisors of a prime power? That is totally ordered, right? You have 1, p, p squared, p cubed, and so forth. So it's totally ordered, and I have, again, this lemma. If my prime power is 0 or 1, then I have value, well, 1 or value minus 1. If the length is larger, I get 0. And then if I look at the how do I express y over x as a product of primes, if it's not different primes, if I have prime powers in, I will get 0, and otherwise I will get exactly for every prime which actually occurs. If it doesn't occur, I have length 1, I have just the element itself, and I have value 1, but for each prime occurring, I get a minus 1. So that gives me this property. So that's the Möbius function for the divisors. Okay. So what one can now do with this Möbius function? In some way it is a, you can look at this abstractly, you can look at a lattice for example, and you can ask, what is this Möbius function for the lattice? It's a somewhat compact form to give you some information for the lattice. And there is, for example, one question where I had where a PhD student of mine wrote his thesis about a couple of years ago, was that we looked at the lattice of subgroups of the symmetric group. What is the Möbius function for trivial subgroup to the whole subgroup? If you look at it, you get basically values n factorial or n factorial over 2 and plus minus 1, apart from the fact, from the case that n is 6, but n is 6 anyhow is special for the symmetric group, because for n equals 6, the symmetric group has a non-trivial outer automorphism. Okay. Does this hold in general? This was already known. It doesn't hold in general. There are some further cases, but there is still quite a bit open. And I mean, the interesting thing is that you get that your lattice can be quite large, and there is a lot happening. And what the Möbius function does is, by just getting these single numbers, it really takes a lot of the whole lattice together, and somehow, yes, you get cancellation of things included in each other, and it's the fact that you get nice values there in some way indicate a certain regularity of the structure. And then, so that is one thing. But of course, if we go back to the number theoretic interpretation, the number theoretic Möbius function has a particular property. There is something which is called Möbius inversion. And that is except that holds also here. So, and it helps inverting summation formulas. So this is theorem 328, and this is called the Möbius inversion formula. Möbius inversion. So, P is a poset, and we want it to be finite. And let's take two functions on the poset. F and G go from the poset to, well, some field K. Then I claim that the fact that G of T is equal to the sum over S smaller or equal than T F of S, this holding for all elements T in the poset is equivalent to F of T is the sum over S smaller or equal than T G of S times mu of S, comma T. So, if you have some function, well, if you have two functions on the lattice, typically one of them is easier to describe, one is not, and you sum one function is obtained as the sum of the other function, you also can obtain them the other way around, and you do so with the coefficients given by the Möbius function. So, let me prove this. I look at the vector space of functions, and I will call it k to the p. This is an uppercase p. This shall be the functions, the set of functions from p to k, and that is a vector space. Right? If I have function, k is a vector space, functions into a vector space always form a vector space themselves. So this is a vector space. Okay. on this vector space, I define an action of the incidence algebra. Acts on this vector space. And if you get slightly scared with these terms, look back at the matrix world. You can interpret the incidence algebra as an algebra of certain upper triangular matrices. How can you interpret these functions? They are vectors. If your pose set has n elements, these are n entry vectors. This action is really just multiplication of vectors with matrices. On this vector space, in which way? If I have some function in the vector space and I have an element psi in, so I have here f lies in the vector space and psi lies in the incidence algebra, so I want to define how does it act on it. So this is again a function on the pose set, so I need to say what shall it be on some element t that is the sum over s is smaller or equal than t f of s times psi, well, this is one, too much, psi of s comma t, and that's just vector times matrix. Yes, row vectors, because I'm multiplying the matrix from the right and I'm acting from the right, and that's just what I like to do. If you have already had some classes, you will have seen the concept of algebras acting on vector spaces. That's basically what you do with these things. That's where they live, that's what they like to do. So this is not some goofy thing. This is a very natural thing. And probably easiest argued by going to the matrix world, this action satisfies the obvious things you would want. You have that if you act with a product psi times gamma, this is the same as if acting first by psi and then by gamma. That's associativity of matrix multiplication. If you act with psi plus gamma, this is the same as if you act with psi and you act with gamma and you add the resulting two functions. So this is really a proper, nice action. Okay. Now, if I look at this action, I can simplify these two equations. So let's call this equation star and this equation star star. So with a description of this action, I can simplify this. So then star becomes so I have an identity for G, right? This is a function on the pose set. T is an element of the pose set, it's the value of that function. So this is a statement for G. What is G? Or what am I doing on the right hand side? I'm adding over all elements that are smaller or equal than T. So, and I multiply with a coefficient 1. The coefficient 1, if s is smaller or equal than t, that was the zeta function. So this is just saying this is f times zeta. And what is the second equation? Well, there I have f. And what I'm going to do here is I'm doing the same kind of thing, but I have mu act on G. F is equal to G acted on by mu. And now I just use the fact that mu is the inverse of zeta multiplicatively to see that these two equations are equivalent. And therefore these two equations are equivalent. If you're uncomfortable with this algebra business and having the things act, you can also prove it directly. Then you need to prove two implications. Then you basically work with the function values, and you need to use the defining property of mu, but it follows that way directly. Okay. So, what can we do with this? One thing we can do is we can look at the Möbius inversion in number theory if we are aware of it, and if you take that definition, this value for the Möbius function here, you get exactly the number theoretic Möbius inversion. What can you use it for? For example, we have seen that if we sum over the phi function over all divisors, we get n. So let me mention this as an example. This is in the lattice of divisors. Example, phi of n, n is the sum over d divides n phi of d. We've shown that in the homework. If we are inverting, so that is this, the function g is just the number itself. So this is equivalent to the fact that f, which is the phi function, phi of n is the sum over smaller, here is divisor, d divides n, and now we have here mu, we have first d times mu of d comma n, and what is this? This is equal to minus 1 to the, you shouldn't use d, let's call it c, where n divided by d has c different prime divisors. And if you take the number theoretic Möbius function, that is just mu of n divided by d. Where this is the number theoretic Möbius function. So that gives us another formula for evaluating phi. It also gives us a formula if you don't want the values just phi, the Euler function, for those who had already algebra 2, there are things which are called cyclotomic polynomials. And they behave multiplicatively exactly as the phi function works. They are the divisors of x to the n minus 1. You can use this to give an expression for values of for what these cyclotomic polynomials are as a product and quotient of polynomials of the form x to the a minus 1. So that is one consequence, and that is probably a decent point when to stop. Yeah, so thank you very much. I'll see you on Friday, and then we'll be doing two or three more examples of this, what this inversion formula does, or how one can interpret it. Thank you.